Good evening and welcome to tonight's program hosted by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. My name is Alison Van Diggelen. It's my pleasure to introduce tonight's guest speakers. Kim Poleji is a longtime Silicon Valley entrepreneur, innovator, and the chairwoman of Clear Street, Inc. Prior to joining Clear Street, Kim was CEO of SpikeSource and also co-founded Marimba, where she served as president, CEO, and chairwoman. Kim worked in software management at Sun Microsystems and was the original project manager for Java. In 2011, Kim served on President Obama's Innovation Advisory Board. She's won numerous awards, including the 2010 National Center for Women and Information Technology Innovator Award, and early in her career was recognized as one of Time magazine's 25 most influential Americans. Kim earned her bachelor's degree in biophysics from the University of California, Berkeley, and studied computer science at the University of Washington. Vivek Wadhwa is a fellow at the Rock Center for Corporate Governance at Stanford University, director of research at the Center for Entrepreneurship and Research Commercialization at Duke University, and distinguished fellow at Singularity University. He founded two software companies and is the co-author of Innovating Women, the Changing Face of Technology. Foreign Policy magazine named Vivek a top 100 global thinker in 2012 and 13, and Time magazine listed him as one of the 40 most influential minds in technology. Vivek earned his bachelor's degree in computer studies from the University of Canberra in Australia and his MBA from New York University. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Kim and Vivek. So Kim and Vivek, thank you for joining me. I want to start by talking about the big picture of women in tech. There is a real dearth of women in tech. It's under 20% of engineers in America are female, and less than 20% of women in technology in the U.S. are female. Let's frame the problem. Kim, would you like to start and explain how you see the problem? And how you see it's a disadvantage for the U.S. and for the world.
Sure, sure. This is such a rich topic, and I'm so glad we're all together here and have the opportunity to discuss it this evening. It's a systemic issue, and there's no one single solution. When I think about how we address this issue of getting more women in tech, first, it starts at the very beginning, when parents think about what their children can become. You go down the aisle of a toy store and you have engineering toys for boys, but you have dolls for girls, in your typical toy store. That still is the case today. So just even as early as, you know, the very first years, a child is kind of being conditioned about what, you know, what they're capable of doing. Then, you know, if you look at through the course of school, K-12, college, higher education, we see very few women comparatively deciding to study, you know, STEM, science, technology, engineering, math courses, and those who do often drop out or, you know, don't end up pursuing that as a career. So there is a small pipeline to begin with, and then it gets smaller and smaller over time. And just thinking of the arc of my own career, when I graduated in 84 from Berkeley, about 30% or so, a little over 30% of computer science grads nationwide were women. Then it went down to somewhere around 10-12%. It's now at 18%, the latest figures show. But the fact that over 25 years we should actually go backwards is appalling, when in fact, of course, we need so many more engineers, more technologists, more people, not just engineers and technologists, but more people in general who can think computationally, who think about how to solve problems, who understand critical thinking, who can motivate teams to solve, you know, new challenges. And computation And technology really is becoming part of everything. You look at the biggest breakthroughs in medicine today, it's the intersection of computation with biology. So we need many more women. We need underrepresented minorities and many more women to major in computing, to decide that this is something that they want to pursue as a career. But even separate from that, to take classes, to be exposed to, you know, to learning this knowledge, because no matter what you do in your career, whether you're an architect or an engineer, you're going to need that background, that founding.
Right. Thank you, Kim. And Vivek, you have taken it on as a mission. You have been raising your voice about this issue and having some confrontations with guys in tech or the tech community as a whole. Tell us about your epiphany and what is motivating your drive to change this very low number of women in tech.
Alyssa, I want to start backwards. I want to talk about the opportunity. I see mankind being at a turning point when technology has advanced to the point that we can now solve humanity's grand challenges. We can fix the problems that have held back humanity since its inception almost. Now we can solve the problems of health, hunger, energy, poverty, safety, security. The technology now has advanced to the point that we can now start solving big problems. We can now create almost unlimited clean energy. We can now have almost, unlimited clean water. We can grow as much food as we want to using technology. This is what's become possible. The tragedy I see is that the most innovative land on this planet, Silicon Valley, is obsessed with building stupid, silly apps. if you look at the type of things which get glorified by the tech blogs, the TechCrunch, Alfred, a butler for some rich kids, won first prize. This is the sort of boys club group think that you have over here, and that's where the majority of venture capital dollars are going, to these mindless apps, when we could be solving the world's problems. Women have many advantages. Now, in this new world that I'm talking about, it's all about understanding different disciplines. As Kim said, if you look at one of the biggest opportunities is the intersection of engineering with biology or with medicine, essentially. If you start looking at some of the fields outside computing, women are now beginning to dominate it. A lot of the softer sciences, a lot of the humanities, field after field after field, women are beginning to dominate it. They're now equaling men in mathematics, in achievement in many, many different fields. If we could only fix this boys' club mentality in Silicon Valley and have this center of innovation level the playing field for women, we would get a lot more innovation. It would be good for the Silicon Valley. It would be good for the world. And we would have people who really care about humanity, who really care about bettering the world. We would now enable them to do what they want to do, is fix the world's problems. So this is why I care so much about it. And this is why I'm fighting this battle, because I see a lost opportunity. I want to fix that opportunity.
And tell us about your epiphany, though. I think that's a key point to understand your drive here.
Now I'm going to end up defending the boys' club that I'm attacking. I've been researching entrepreneurship for several years. I've been researching Silicon Valley. Like Mark Andreessen, he did an interview with the New Yorker recently. He talked about Silicon Valley's diversity. I too used to talk about Silicon Valley's diversity. I had done research on immigration in America, and I documented that 52% of startups in Silicon Valley were founded by people like me, immigrants.
Immigrants, yeah.
People like you, immigrants, people born abroad, who came over here and made it their home. 52% of Silicon Valley is immigrant, and they're people from all over the world, almost every country you can name. So it looks like a perfect meritocracy. It looks amazing. And that's what I used to say about Silicon Valley until I came over here. And we went to a TechCrunch event. So my wife and I are sitting in the front because I was writing for TechCrunch, and we happened to be sitting next to Mark Zuckerberg. So in the middle of the program, my wife says, Thavinder says, Vivek, do you notice something strange over here? I said, yeah, we're sitting next to Mark Zuckerberg. Isn't that really cool? I mean, you know, it's, when you get a chance to sit next to Mark Zuckerberg, you know, all of us turn into children. It's like, wow, I mean, Zuckerberg. That's how I felt. Basically, coming to Silicon Valley, I mean, Kim Polis, I mean, I'm sort of saying, wow, I'm sitting next to Kim. It's, you know, that's how I feel right now also, that you have all these celebrities that you read about, you know, these amazing people who have achieved so much success. You get to be next to them. It's such an honor to be here in Silicon Valley. But then she sort of opened my eyes and she said, Vivek, notice what's not here, and where are the women? And that was like the twilight zone for me. And suddenly I started looking around the room and noticing that there were hardly any women. On stage the entire evening, I counted two women, I think. One was a circus performer, another one was TechCrunch staff. There were practically no women on stage. Then I didn't sleep much that night. I came home and started looking at my own research. I started going through the website of tech companies, looking for women. I looked to the boards of Apple. I shouldn't be naming names. We have started looking through the names of all the leading companies, all men on the boards, in management roles. Started looking through the list of chief technology officers. I could name all the women CTOs on my hand. I mean, very, very few of them. And then I realized that I had researched entrepreneurs. I had done several papers on them, interviewed, surveyed thousands of entrepreneurs, and I was so ignorant that I didn't even record the gender of the people I was interviewing because I thought gender was irrelevant.
You thought it was a meritocracy?
I thought it was a meritocracy. And it didn't even occur to me that gender was an important factor over here. And that's what woke me up, and this is why I'm also trying to get the Boys Club to wake up and say, you idiots, there's something seriously wrong over here. Look around. You know, don't be enamored with your own success. Look around and see what's missing here. You're hurting yourselves. This is the mission I'm on right now.
Great, great. So, Kim, that's definitely worth an applause. Kim, you've written a chapter in the book, Innovating Women, and you wrote that we need as many bright minds inventing the future as possible. Can you give us some specifics from your experience of what women bring to tech in solving world problems?
Well, so sort of just baseline, if we look at what the research shows, that the data is very clear, the more diversity, whether it's gender or whether it's age or whether it's ethnicity, the better the outcome in every scenario. You know, universities, academics have studied this for years, and it's actually a very interesting area of academia, you know, what that brings diversity in a group in terms of decision making, in terms of achievement of, you know, goals and so forth. So just by virtue of the value of diversity, having more women in the engineering core and in positions of leadership in these companies will bring greater success for the companies, for the shareholders, and then for all the innovations we hope that these companies bring to the world. So that's kind of foundational. You know, I think women are, you know, creative, curious problem solvers when they have the tools to go solve the problem. So what I want is to see more women arming themselves with those tools. So that's first knowledge, technical knowledge, and that doesn't have to mean you have to have an engineering or computer science degree. If that's something you want to do, wonderful. Mm-hmm. But even just, you know, having a few classes in software design or, you know, understanding kind of what computation means and is extremely powerful no matter what the field. And creativity is unleashed, as Vivek was talking about solving big, huge problems, and that's what I was referring to in that chapter. Creativity is unleashed the more you know, and the more particularly you know about different disciplines. The most interesting stuff, in my experience, happens at the edges and the intersections in life in general. And when you get, again, diversity of knowledge, diversity of people experience, you get better results. And we need urgently to solve some big societal challenges.
Right. And going specifically to the economic advantage, the opportunity cost of not using these women, Vivek, you've written that companies that women start tend to be more practical and sensible than those started by men. They achieve 35% higher ROI, return on investment, and when venture-backed, bring in 12% higher revenue than venture-backed male-owned companies. These are remarkable figures. I'm curious, one, your sources, and two, why do more people not know these statistics?
These have been published by several different groups. I think Illuminate Ventures had published a summary paper on this, and they cited all the sources. So the data are available. It's irrefutable. And if you look at the inverse of that, Silicon Valley, the venture capital system that I've been criticizing, Kauffman Foundation analyzed the returns from the venture capital system and found it to be below the stock markets. In other words, you could just take darts and throw them at a wall, and you'd probably have better results than the venture capital system here produced. Why? Because it's geared towards funding these brain-dead startups I talked about. If we had women venture capitalists, if we had women executive teams, I have no doubt that we'd be funding a much richer set of companies, which would achieve greater success. We'd have more innovation. Silicon Valley would have more success. And we would start fixing the world's problems much better.
Right. And two of the solutions that I'd like to discuss is this unconscious bias that we all have, men and women. And also the other part of the education is women choosing STEM in college. So Vivek, let's start with your part. You've said you've made it your mission to make everyone aware of the problem, men and women. And you write in your book about the unconscious bias. Can you give us some examples that we can all relate to of unconscious bias by women against women, perhaps, as well, well as...
First of all, most men don't realize that they're holding women back. I mean, like I said, I blame myself. I mean, until I started researching this, I didn't realize that I had a bias. The fact that I didn't even record the gender showed that I didn't get it. I didn't understand the disadvantage women feel. Now, since then, I've interviewed probably 500-600 women, and the story is consistent. Every one of them, almost, probably 99% of them, have had all sorts of obstacles thrown their way. Even when they're amazing women, like my friend Kim, she is one of the most successful entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley in the world. What she's achieved is mind-blowing. The fact that she's not a household name, the fact that we talk about Andreessen versus Kim, blows my mind. Why is she not the poster child for success in Silicon Valley based on what she's achieved? So the fact is that even when women, achieve, great things, they don't get credit for it. So every step of the way, they're left out, they're left behind. It just infuriates me when I think about the ignorance. And some of it is conscious bias. That if you look at Gamersgate, you have conscious sexism over there is disgusting. That's the conscious stuff.
Yeah.
The rest of it is unconscious. Men think that they're not discriminating. They think that they're very open-minded, and when you hear them talk, they say really dumb things, that they really don't get it. They don't understand the problems women face. This is what the problem is, that they don't understand that even the women that they work with have faced harassment or discrimination in one form or the other through their careers, and this is what's holding them back. They just don't understand it. And this is why the book was very important, because we got a chance to present the stories of ordinary women. There's some great women like Lynn and Kim in there, Lynn Tilton, Kay Koplowitz. There's some great women in it. But the majority of women we profiled are ordinary women. And all of them talk about their obstacles and their challenges and how they surmounted them. So it's really, if anyone reads a book, they'll understand the depth of the problem. They'll understand the types of bias that exist. And they'll get ideas on how to fix it.
Right. Yeah, I do want to focus on solutions and moving in the right direction. Kim, we talked earlier about feeding the pipeline, about the importance of getting more women to choose STEM subjects, to go into STEM subjects. Let's start by, if you could share your story. I understand you had a connection with ELIZA, an
yes.
artificial intelligence program.
Yes.
Tell us about that and how that really lit the fire under you for getting involved with computer programming and the whole world of tech.
So it's a serendipitous story. I grew up here in the Bay Area in Berkeley, and there was a place called the Lawrence Hall of Science. There still is a wonderful science museum there. And they had computers running this program called ELIZA. And ELIZA, it turns out, was one of the seminal artificial intelligence programs demonstrating natural language processing. But as a little girl of about 9 years old, to me, ELIZA was an online therapist, psychiatrist, because that's basically what ELIZA is. ELIZA says, how are you doing today? You type in your answer. And Eliza says, why are you feeling crummy? And you say, well, you know, my brother beat me up. And why did your brother beat you up? You know, so you're actually having a conversation with a computer. So this is now many decades ago, and I was fascinated by what made this possible. You know, what was software, and how could I also kind of get Eliza in a bit of a corner logically, and, you know, basically kind of find the limits of AI at the time. Anyway, the point is, this was my first exposure with computers. Was engaging, fun. It was about exploring, you know, finding boundaries, and it wasn't something that only boys did. And I just, like I said, it was serendipitous. I got lucky. And that, my mom would drop me off in the afternoons, and that sort of started this lifelong attraction to computing. I ended up majoring in biophysics because I love the intersection of these different disciplines, biological, physical, digital. It was kind of early days for biophysics back then. Today, now it's a huge booming field. But I also love software and computing. So I was a girl geek, entering science fairs, but never feeling like it wasn't something for me. I had parents who were immigrants who really encouraged my brother and both of us, my brother and me, to pursue science and technology. So it did start young.
And what do you think can be done by colleges to get that pipeline more full of women, get it up to even 50%?
Right.
It's dwindling. The numbers of women going into computer science since the 80s has halved.
Yes.
So we're really on a downward trend. Do you?
Yes.
How do you anticipate turning that around?
Well, one of the things that makes me excited about software and technology is that we now have a new platform for education and apps that actually make it fun to learn all sorts of different subjects. So again, going back to when, you know, children are very young, there are now programs like, there's one called Hopscotch, there's Goldie Blocks. These are all programs that are kind of games or building blocks to learn how to be an engineer, aimed at targeting very young girls. So we now have tools that are educational resources that weren't available before when I was growing up. Children are amazing when you just give them tools. They can teach themselves and teach each other and are incredibly creative. So that gets me excited. And then your question about college or universities, there are now courses that are being offered. Like, one is called The Beauty and Joy of Computing. It's being offered at Berkeley, Harvard, I believe, several other universities, and it has over 50%, last time I looked, enrollment by women. So when there are courses, now this is not for computer science majors, this is for anyone who is interested in
understanding
computing.
So it's an entry level to computer science.
And we should make that a standard lower division requirement, just like English is or history is. And the same going back again to K-12, you know, kindergarten.
Bring it in earlier and 12. Direct it for
exactly.
Women.
Exactly.
Allison, I want to add something over here. That computer science isn't like rocket science. It's not like medicine, which takes years and years to learn. You can learn how to code within 3 months.
Yeah.
So women who are like Kim was in different fields, women who have studied English, you can talk about a whole variety of subjects, who become excited about computer science, they can learn it. There are online courses as well as courses in universities. Within 3 months, you can learn how to code. The skills that you have outside computing are often more helpful than taking more computer science classes. So let's not assume that that only the innovators only have to have computer science degrees. Computer science is one of the needs, and also you can hook up with people who have computer science degrees, and you can provide leadership in building world-changing technologies. So I want to make sure that we don't lock out people because of this phony pipeline that we keep referring to in Silicon Valley.
Right, but I do think that that's worth emphasizing. In fact, Harvey Mudd, they started looking at their figures back in 2006, and they implemented a similar program to encourage more women to do computer science, and they paid for them to go to the Grace Hopper celebration. They paid for them to connect with mentors, and I think that has really, the statistics are, they increased the number of females in computer science from 10% in 2006 to 43% today, and I think that is definitely a program that's worth repeating in other colleges across the nation. But Vivek, I do want you to have some time to explore why you don't feel the pipeline is necessarily the key solution to this?
Because in the advancing technologies I'm talking about, cross-disciplinary knowledge provides a big advantage. You can build health devices just by understanding the needs of health. You can deliver new methods for agriculture by understanding how agriculture works. Computer science is a tiny part of it. You can always find computer programmers to do the low-level geeky stuff. So women shouldn't be discouraged from entering the field of innovation just because they haven't studied computer science. Or companies shouldn't have an excuse for not including women in their teams because they haven't studied computer science. Let's not get hung up on that. We have problems to solve right now, and we need cross-disciplinary knowledge. I'll give you an example. Steve Jobs emphasized the importance of design. Design is everything right now in the tech world. Okay, what do you need for design? Empathy. Liberal arts. The humanities. It's not about computer science. The engineers aren't necessarily the best designers. It's the musicians and the artists who are the better designers. Well, why can't we have women now becoming designers and be designing elegant computer software, working hand in hand with the engineers? There are many, many, many roles for women in this world of innovation I'm talking about, and I want to make sure we don't exclude them because of this one obsession with computer science. The U.S. only graduates 70,000 computer scientists a year, which is nothing. So, and the innovation economy needs hundreds of thousands of people, possibly millions of people.
Yeah, there's going to be a shortage.
Yeah.
One important point of getting more women into tech is the importance of role models. Megan Smith, who contributed to your book, she's formerly VP with Google X, and she's now the Chief Technology Officer for the White House. Thank you very much.
For the United States.
Yes.
Yeah.
She said, I think technical women are largely invisible both historically and currently. And she emphasizes the need to get their stories told and their achievements more visible. Kim, you have an important story to share on that as far as the media's role in this. Can you share your story about what happened to you when you were the key spokesperson for your company?
Sure. This, I think it's under the category of weird stuff that can happen.
It's not weird stuff. It happens much too often, Kim.
It does.
I mean, this is why I was very eager for you to tell your story because you've been so quiet and so modest about it. The fact is that you're a role model for women. I mean, you're a rock star. We should be putting you on a pedestal. We shouldn't be putting
well,
you down
you.
The way the media
thank
did
you,
put you
Vivek.
Down.
I appreciate
this
that.
This is why you need to speak up.
thank you.
Go
thank
Kim.
You for giving
Go
me
Kim.
The opportunity to do that with this book and for this forum.
But you're
tonight.
A rock star, my friend. let's not underplay that.
That's high,
I want these women here to
from
learn
you.
From you.
Thank you. Thank right. you. I appreciate it. So I am really a girl geek, not a rock star.
You're a rock star.
But let me.
You've always been a rock star for me. Ever since I read about you, many, many years ago. You've been someone I've looked up to and admired.
High praise. Thank right. you from you. Thank you. So I was the founding product manager of Java. We released Java in 1996 or 95, and then four of us left in early 96 to found a company called Marimba to basically take Java into the, the world of business and make it possible to automate software delivery and updating and all this wonderful stuff we were so excited about. I was the CEO of the company. I had three engineers as co-founders. They all asked me to be the CEO. I was a product manager by background. It was a good fit for transitioning into a first-time CEO role, even though it was a, learning, by fire hose. Typical story. What happened is that Marimba was a high-profile company because there were four of us coming out of the Java team at the beginning of the internet boom. And what I found after a while, not too long, is that we were kind of being treated differently, and I was being treated differently from other male CEOs. And first, a lot more attention on me as a CEO, but the more I tried to get the focus on the company and the technology and what was happening, the internet was changing the world, the more the focus was on me in the media. And it was extremely frustrating, and it ended up being this bizarre, extremely kind of ironic situation where in certain circumstances, and I tell the story of one major national publication, I was accused by some in the media of promoting myself, even though that was the thing I was trying to get the focus off. I was trying to get the focus on company technology and, you know, potential of the internet. And this kind of hit a point of extreme absurdity when a piece was published in this major business publication called The Beauty of Hype. That was the title. And it had happened as a result of a Commonwealth Club talk I had given about the future of the internet. A reporter came up afterwards, said, I want to write a story about, you know, what you guys are working on. I said, only if you write about what we're working on and the technology and the innovation, not about me. She promised to do that. And then at the last minute called me and said, you're not going to like the story I wrote. My editor didn't like what I had submitted. He wanted a different story. And so the whole story was, you know, full of, you know, anonymous quotes like, I don't know what Kim's company does, but I do know she has pretty red hair. You know, things like that. And so that was not unusual, unfortunately, that there were...
It's still not unusual. It still happens to women.
It does.
And even when women achieve extraordinary success, they're not highlighted. You know, they're not put on a pedestal. That's the problem.
And just to talk about a woman's appearance, you know, particularly, we're talking about a business publication. This is not a fashion magazine, okay? It undermines women. And Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, just wrote a book, and she has a whole chapter about this. Because just by definition, when you bring up the topic, you undermine what the woman is actually trying to communicate.
Right, you change the focus away from technology to their clothes or their hobbies and
their hair, their
irrelevance.
Purse, I mean.
Irrelevance. Yeah. Yes.
She wore high heels. I mean.
Yes. We are not going to go there tonight, right? I want to get on to something that's very important. It's been in the news a lot this month, and that is equal pay. We're here at Microsoft. Question from the audience. Vivek, do you feel that women and men should wait for karma?
Okay, I've got to defend Satya Nadella here. You know,
okay, let's give the context for people that haven't heard
this
story.
Satya, the CEO, Satya said something really dumb at Grace Hopper, and I exchanged emails with him soon afterwards.
So he's the CEO of Microsoft.
The CEO of Microsoft, and he was talking about himself and his karma and how he dealt, because I tell you, Indians, foreigners face discrimination wherever they are. That's the reality, we do. And he didn't use these words or say any of the stuff, but the fact is that just like women have faced discrimination, Indians have faced discrimination. 30 years ago, the proportion of Indian-founded companies in Silicon Valley was close to zero. Today, it's about 15-16%. I know from my experience in North Carolina that when I was raising capital, I helped build one company, we took it public. When I went to raise venture capital, the local VCs wouldn't return my phone calls, and eventually, I had them tripping over me, and I said, why didn't you do it when I asked? Their thing was, because you people don't make good CEOs. We were a people, okay? So Indians face the same discrimination. And Satya, without him saying it, I know what he was referring to was the fact that he also faced discrimination. This is what the press didn't pick up on. They don't seem to understand that Indians, he's an Indian, okay? The fact is, this is why he's gotten so much attention, that he was referring to it without referring to it. The fact that he talked about, look, I too face discrimination. I let karma do its thing. I proved myself when I succeeded. He couldn't say that. I think he started saying it. He realized he couldn't say it in public. And he deeply regretted what he said afterwards. So I exchanged emails and saying, and they were very blunt emails back and forth. And he said, look, I was dead wrong. I messed up, blah, blah, blah. We talked about it. He was humble enough. This is the CEO of Microsoft responding to someone who he knows has been a big critic of sexism in Silicon Valley, explaining. And then we started talking about the solutions and so on. So I know that... Nadella is dead serious about implementing change. He is as strong a proponent of women and diversity as I am. And I expect a lot of good will come from this because the light has been shone on him now, has shined on him. And whenever we talk about sexism, he gets dragged into it. So he's acutely aware of it, and I know that he's going to be exemplary, and he's going to have Microsoft lead the way in fixing this problem.
Well, he will know that the world will be watching him.
Absolutely.
Kim, can you share your perspective on getting equal pay for equal work? What has worked for you, and do you have any advice for women here tonight and people listening on the radio?
So first, just an observation, the most highly paid roles at technology companies are senior engineers, technologists, and managers, executives. And the fact is, that's where the ranks of women are very thin. Something like maybe 20% of management positions at most in your typical tech company are women, 80% are men. And you know, that's across the board. So the problem
it's actually a third of what you're saying. It's
even worse.
It's
yeah,
much much worse.
Yeah,
than that.
As you go up in the higher positions, you're right. And so again, this goes back to we need more women getting into this field so that they have an opportunity to rise to these positions. And part of that is women realizing that they have an opportunity, that this is a field for them, a career for them, and that also that they need to reach for the next rung on the ladder. I mean, there was a point in my own career, I was getting great reviews, but I somehow wasn't rising above the position. You know, I seemed to be stuck. I couldn't understand why, but I finally decided I needed to take, you know, fate into my own hands and look for another role elsewhere. And then serendipitously...
So you couldn't just ask?
I asked, but I got obtuse answers.
Okay.
So serendipitously...
So asking is not always the solution, basically.
That's right. Sometimes you just have to take responsibility for your own, you know, next step in your career. And
you leave. This is in the tech world, there are a lot of options. Women should not accept substandard salaries. They should leave. Or they should start their own companies and hire other women and mentor other women.
Good point.
Don't put up with discrimination.
This led me down the path, ultimately, of becoming an entrepreneur. Yeah. So you're right.
So we have a very timely question from the audience. Do you think women play a role in holding women back? This is something that Sheryl Sandberg wrote about in her book, Lean In. Can you talk to that first, Kim?
Boy, that's a that's a loaded question. And I don't go around thinking women are holding other women back. I think there are examples where when that happens, it breaks my heart when I see it. But what I see more and more of is women helping each other. I mean, for example, just this the turnout here tonight, so many more opportunities for women to support each other in the industry. Women 2.0, there's so many organizations now that are aimed at getting more women and helping support women rise into leadership positions in these companies. So maybe I'm more of a glass half full person, but I see women helping each other, and I feel much more presence of women in the industry than I did 20 years ago when some of these attacks were happening.
Right. Alison, I've researched this systematically. There's a generational shift, which is very clear to me. That the older generation, there was one crop of women who basically achieved success by being like the guys. And when they got there, their attitude was that if we can do it, so can others. And they have not been helping others. So there are a bunch of women who are very much like that. But it's changing now. The younger generation is getting mentored not only from women but also from men. I have a research paper coming out hopefully next month by Kauffman Foundation that shows this data that the young group is much different. They haven't had the biases or they haven't faced as many obstacles as the older generation did, and they're mentoring and helping each other, and that's the solution to fixing the problem. How did Indians go from being 0% of Silicon Valley startups to about 15%? You've got to realize that Indians are only about 6% of the Silicon Valley population. We start 15 to 16% of its companies. How did we get this overrepresentation? By mentoring each other, by helping each other, by recognizing there was a problem and working to fix it. This is what women need to do right now, is they need to help each other, mentor each other, and get even guys to mentor them, because the advantage they have is that men who have daughters really care. Men who have wives, loving wives, really care. There's some sexist jerks out there who will take advantage of women, and you can normally find out who they are by asking other women. Leave those people aside. let them sink. Get help from the people who do care, who do want to help, and succeed, and then help others behind you. That's the key here. You must help others along the way. As you achieve success in anything, help women behind you.
Yes, I agree with that. And beyond mentors, there are a lot of organizations. I'll list a few here. The Nita Borg Institute, Astia, Girl Geek Dinners here in Silicon Valley, Women 2.0, the Global Fund for Women. Would you like to add to any particular ones that you've benefited from or you support, Kim?
I love these organizations that are, for example, Girls Who Code, Black Girls Code, that are focused on young girls and getting them exposed to and excited about a career in the world of technology. In addition to those that you've mentioned, that's a whole new phenomenon that's really emerged over the last two, 3 years.
There are groups springing up all over the world right now of women helping women. And this is what Indians did with each other. They started helping each other in Silicon Valley, became a role model for the rest of the world. So there are now chapters of the Indus Entrepreneurs, TIE, and other groups all over the world who are helping each other. That's what women need to do.
And I think it seems to me it's part of a larger movement. I don't know if any of you here saw Emma Watson of Harry Potter fame, talking at the United Nations last month, there was a quote that just jumped out at me, and it's very powerful. How can we affect change in the world when only half of it is invited or feel welcome to participate in the conversation? And I think that applies to women in tech very much so. We need to engage and we need to aim for 50%. Let's take another question from the audience. Don't you think the problem is not necessarily about STEM courses for women, but in retaining women in STEM careers? Kim, can you talk to that?
I think it's both of those issues. And that's, as I mentioned at the beginning, this really is systemic. There's so many places along that path where we lose women. We don't have enough to begin with who focus on this as a potential career. And then it's true that many drop out, for example, midway through university in technology, STEM-related fields, and then once they're in their careers, many drop out for both family reasons and also because they often feel discouraged or feel that they're not rising to, you know, the level that they'd like to or that they feel that they're capable of. So I think it's all of the above.
Right. And there's a question from the audience here, just widening it beyond Silicon Valley, beyond even the United States. What is the implication on the global level, at a global level, of women being left out of technology and business? And how do we address this? I mean, that's really our big picture. But is there anything you'd like to add specifically at the global scale?
Well, that's why I'm so excited to have so many women in the audience tonight from other countries who are STEM majors, who are pursuing technical careers. Again, it goes back to what we talked about before. Our biggest societal challenges, whether it's reinventing energy sources or dealing with poverty, with fresh water, you know, the challenges that we face as a humanity around the world all depend on technical solutions. I mean, technology is the only key to solving this. That doesn't mean we don't need people who, like Vivek said earlier, have backgrounds in humanities and, you know, multidisciplinary fields. But the point is, we have to have many more smart, young, motivated people all over the world who are pursuing technical careers, excited about solving these big problems.
There's so many problems to solve in the world. Every country has major, major problems. Let's empower women to go and start solving those problems worldwide. It's not, you know, they don't have to come here to be part of Silicon Valley. Every country, they can, you know, the way they are, they can start solving their local problems using the same technology. The beauty right now is that the knowledge is available globally. The same technologies we're building here can be built anywhere. It used to be that the supercomputers you needed to do sophisticated analysis or build products were only available in the United States. Now our smartphones are more powerful than the great supercomputers were 30 or 40 years ago. So you can buy sensors everywhere. You can buy medical kits anywhere. You can buy all these. You can build robots anywhere. You know, all these advances are available to anyone everywhere. Information is on the cloud. You can start a company and get almost infinite computing online anywhere in the world. So there's nothing holding entrepreneurs in the world back.
Right. Question from the audience. Do you think that women's nature, brackets, being a mother, taking care of children, could be an obstacle to pursue a career in STEM fields? I think the answer
is... No, it's the opposite. It's a benefit because it gives them that desire to do good for the world. It gives them a sense of concern about others, which some spoiled brats might not have.
But from a practical point, someone has to look after the kids.
Yeah, that but is, why that can't is men equally... Why can't men participate in looking after their kids? Why do women have to have the entire burden?
But I think,
for a few months, they may need maternity leave. After that, both parents can be participating.
Well, I see this happen in Scandinavian countries and other countries all over the
world
very well.
But I think it comes back to the issue of what tech companies can do to make it a culture that's welcoming to women. For example, generous maternity leave, having daycare on site.
Exactly.
Anything else you'd like to add to that? Let's talk about egg freezing.
before we talk about that, but why not allow women to go home at 4 o'clock if they have to pick up their children and then continue work from home? I mean, just go through
flexible
all the policies.
Yeah. Right.
This egg freezing, my view is that it might be a good benefit, but rather than having benefits to prevent people from having children, why not have benefits to assist them having children and to make it life easier for them when they do have children. Why do we pick on just one small segment of it, and why not just broaden our policies and look after the interests of both men and women who are parents?
Kim, would you like to bring in the European perspective?
Well, I'm not coming from Europe, but I...
She's a Yankee. She's an American.
But you mentioned Scandinavian countries.
There are examples of other countries that figured this out a long time ago that realized that, yes, there are two parents in a typical marriage, that both of whom can contribute equally to raising a child and running a household. It's not rocket science. It's pretty clear, but we need to have policies in the workplace like we've talked about that reflect that.
All right. Another question from the audience, probably for both of you. Kim, you can start. What are some resources to locate women CTOs or developers? Are there?
Well, and this is what every tech company wants, is to find, these great women CTOs. The fact is, like Vivek said, many CTOs actually don't have PhDs in computer science. They have interdisciplinary backgrounds. They have technical backgrounds, but they might even have an English degree. So I think one point is broaden the lens. Look for women who come from a variety of different fields, who have maybe not your typical, formulaic
background. Checked all the boxes,
exactly.
Right.
So that would be one. Certainly, I'd like to see more companies helping solve this whole systemic issue, which is, for example, getting more computer science into the schools, K-12, so girls as well as boys are exposed to it. A lot of school districts can't afford to hire computer science teachers, but we, for example, saw Salesforce.com, Mark Benioff, give, I think, $5 million to San Francisco school district to get more technology and more teachers and more,
And Mark Zuckerberg has done similar.
Exactly. So when we see the company step up and start to address this issue, because our educational system can't alone suddenly change overnight, then we see real change happen, and it's in their best interest anyway.
Vivek?
I agree. Kim answered the question well.
Great. Okay, question from the audience. You mentioned Eliza was a serendipitous experience, but it sounds like you're an outlier. How can we help girls who may not have such outliers? How can we get girls excited about computers and technology? Do you have anything else you can add?
Yeah, this is where I see educational resources, games being a really important part of the whole maker movement, being a really integral part of getting girls exposed to and excited about technology. Because again, it was a hands-on experiential situation. It was not someone said, you have to learn how to code now, and stuck me in a corner. It was, being exposed to something that didn't seem like technology. So we now have so many more resources, and I'd love to see more developers and companies creating these kinds of educational resources. But Vivek has written quite a bit about this, the point that kids teach each other and themselves very well once they have some basic tools. This whole idea of self-driven, child-driven learning is extremely powerful, and we just need to get more of these tools out there.
Vivek, okay. Let me see. I feel there is a bias against women who do not code. This is a question from the audience. I'm a woman in tech, but I do not code. Do you have suggestions for this section of women who do not code? How can they succeed in Silicon Valley?
I would encourage them to become entrepreneurs. I mean, this is what the guys do. Come up, team up with other women, get some coders on your team as well, and come up with ideas for some world-changing companies. More likely than not, they'll come up with ideas for better companies than the guys do, because they won't be trying to build some silly apps. They'll be trying to solve real problems. They'll be solving the problems of mothers, maybe of their grandparents, maybe of their communities. Look outside the traditional solutions that are being built over here. Don't read TechCrunch. Don't go to these silly tech blogs and try to copy what they're doing. Go and solve those real problems and start your own companies.
And to Vivek's point, one of the most powerful assets anyone in this industry has is the ability to motivate teams of people to go and, tackle a really challenging problem. So that ability to bring diverse folks together who have, you know, different knowledge sets, who have very different personalities, to make them all mesh together and move in one direction and solve a really hard problem, that's, you can't go to school and get a degree in that. But I think women have great strength and skills in doing that innately, getting people to move together in one direction. You don't necessarily have, it's not about telling them what to do, it's about getting them excited about moving that direction. And that's real leadership.
I'd like to see thousands more women-led startups. That would fix the system within a period of 5-7 years or so if we had that. This massive movement for women to solve, you know, big problems.
But bringing women into the startup world, or more women into the startup world, doesn't necessarily solve the issue. As you know, you have to have the whole ecosystem. You have to have the funders, the venture capital industry. Vivek, you've been focusing...
Alison, it used to be that you needed venture capital to start a company. This is why in Kim's time, unless you get the VCs to help you, you were in trouble. Everything has changed.
Today it's much cheaper.
Recently, it's 5-7 years ago. You needed $2-3 million for hardware purchases, for server farms and so on. You don't need that anymore. Everything is on the cloud. Computing basically costs nothing. All you need to do to start a world-changing company now is really a laptop, some ideas, maybe some sensors, maybe you're building something with robotics, maybe you're doing something with synthetic biology. But essentially, you need enough food to get you by, somewhere to live, and connectivity. And it doesn't cost much anymore. And just with those tools, you can solve a lot of problems in a lot of countries.
But there is that need for that first round of not necessarily venture capital, but
seed
angel
funding.
Money to...
You can get money from your uncles and aunts, mom and dad, from your friends. You can have your savings as well. $20,000-$30,000 is enough in Silicon Valley to go for a few months. All you need to do is pay your rent and have enough food to eat. And you can start a company now. In other countries, it's even cheaper. So that is no longer a barrier. We don't need venture capitalists anymore. This is why I'm so optimistic about the future. This is one of the key themes of the book, is that, yes, women have been held back. The past has not been good to them. But that doesn't mean the future will be the same, because the cost of starting companies has dropped exponentially. Women now are better educated than men are in most fields. They now are helping each other. They're mentoring each other. And they understand the real problems of the world. This is why I say that the future belongs to women. This is what the conclusion of the book is that the future belongs to women. It's theirs. Go and change the world is what I tell them.
There's a very good question from the audience about the role of men in this. The question is, Vivek, do you see this room? Why is it 95% women? Why are so few major male players taking part in this conversation?
That is a problem, and this is why I've been beating the crap out of them, and I've been so vocal about it, because they're still in a state of denial, and men who should be more active and speaking up are not doing that. They must take their role in solving this problem. They must speak up. They must mentor and help women. They have to do this.
And you mentioned earlier, especially when men have daughters, They
become
something
very sensitive
changes.
To it. Exactly.
They become huge advocates. They become very passionate
right.
about this.
Right. But we need them, and we need other men also now actively working to fix the problem. It's in their interest, because they want the world to be a better place. They need to enable half of our population now to take their rightful role in this new world of innovation.
Another question from the audience, again, looking at the global picture. Jordan and Qatar recently reported to have more girls in STEM than boys. Maybe there's something to learn
Absolutely.
There. Can you talk specifically? Shame
on Silicon Valley. I mean, we put the Arab countries down. We highlight the fact that women are at a disadvantage over there. Look at how women are succeeding over there. We should be ashamed of ourselves over here. They're modeled for Silicon Valley. This is what we don't seem to realize. Here in America, we keep putting down the Middle East, and we keep putting down the rest of the world. We assume we're superior. We are not superior. Many other countries are more advanced than we are in many different ways. Right.
Right. And let's hone in on the tech companies themselves. We already said that it's in their self-interest to get more women and more minorities involved in tech. It's good for innovation. Can you add to that? Can you expand on that? Why is it in each company's self-interest to bring more women and minorities in? Kim?
Again, first, the data. You know, look at the data. More diversity produces better outcome again and again and again. You see that in academic studies and in the real world. Second, we need more bright, motivated problem solvers. And we need to draw on them from every population, draw from every population to build the team of the best problem solvers that, you know, every company hopes to have. So if your pool is smaller by definition, because you're only looking at, you know, for example, primarily men to draw from, you're not going to get the best. You will miss out on opportunities to create groundbreaking products. So
Kim,
for all those
reasons, even more important is the markets. Women are now more active in social media than are men. Women are now do more purchasing than do men. Women are beginning to play as many games as men do. So if you don't understand, you know, that market, you're going to be left out. I mean, it's the, you know, rule 101 of marketing: know thy market. And if you're going to have an all male, you know, company, all male management team, you're going to miss out on your market opportunities. You're going to fail. That's the bottom line.
Okay, and here's a question from an audience member. I am an MBA who works in the business side of tech. How do I climb the ladder in this valley without being an engineer?
So one thing I would say is just get out there. Say yes to opportunities. Go to gatherings like this, the Churchill Club, you know, organizations that bring people together, Women 2.0, startup weekends. Get out there because, for example, if you're looking to build a company or rise within your career, it really comes down to relationships, who you know. I couldn't have founded a company like Marimba if I hadn't worked with three of the most brilliant engineers on the planet on the Java team. And I wouldn't have found out about Java, what became Java, if I hadn't gone to an internal conference where I got exposed to this secret project, which ended up being Java. So just getting out there and saying yes to opportunities, even if it doesn't seem like there's a straight path to what your goal is number one. Number two, I'd say take a class on coding. Like Vivek said, there are tools that are abundantly available online. Don't let the fact that you haven't, you know, written a piece of code stop you from, you know, writing your first line of software.
But Kim, it's not all about code. Look at the management team of any company. You have 7 or 8 people.
You're right.
Only one chief technology officer needs to have the coding skills.
You're right about that.
The rest of the people don't need that skill.
But having that background just gives you an even stronger foundation.
Without doubt, it's helpful.
It's not in and of itself necessary.
Because that's also the excuse why these companies don't have women on their boards. They said that it's a pipeline problem. This pipeline is complete nonsense. It's not a pipeline problem. The battle I had with Twitter. I mean, Twitter has, 8 or 10 board members, 2 college dropouts, a philosophy major, English literature, French literature, all a bunch of flunkies, and only a couple of hardcore computer science majors. And they said that there's a pipeline problem. There's no pipeline problem.
Your point is well taken. My only point is don't be afraid to learn new skills.
Yeah, get together with
3 months of your life, and it may open doors for you.
Yeah.
You need diversity in the teams, in skill, education, and you need to team up with different people and come up with ideas for companies that can change the world.
I want to talk about what companies can do and what public policy can do. In some European countries, there are mandates for minimum number of women on boards. For example, in Norway in 2003, they passed a 40% minimum females on boards of all public companies. I'd love to get both of your views on this. Does it work? The proponents argue that it's necessary to get a critical mass of women in tech. What do you say to that?
I don't think it's necessary. I think Vivek's the point he's been making about widening the lens, that these boards and these companies need to look beyond kind of the small tribe of other men that they know for candidates. I mean, I think the problem really is more that there's not enough effort made and not a wide enough lens that's used to find these candidates for the board. They're out there. There are lots of them. They're just not being asked.
Vivek?
I don't think quotas work. I mean, even in Norway, the proportion of CEOs of companies hasn't increased that much. It's minuscule. because they started loading the boards up with women who they want. You know, they got women with the wrong skills, and they really haven't empowered those women the way they should have. So quotas aren't necessarily the right way. Right now, we need to shame companies. We need to put shareholder pressure on them. We need to call them out. We need the media to be asking the tough questions as to how can you go public with no women on your board? Why don't you have half the women being half the board members being women? We need to apply public pressure right now. That's the fastest way of causing change.
And so if in your view, both of you, mandates don't work, do you think targets work? For example, it started in UK, but it's now in the US. Several companies have signed up to the 30% club. And that is a completely voluntary thing, but it's putting a target. It's putting a number there and saying, we are aiming to get these women on boards. What do you think about that approach?
I do think that's a good idea, to have targets, to even if you don't, out of the gate, achieve that goal. There's at least an understanding now culturally and very clearly at that company throughout the ranks, this is a priority for us.
I think the 30% club is great. So it's a good way of doing it.
Great. And let's go back to mentorship. Kim, I know you are a role model, as Vivek has told us many times. You're a rock star in tech. Tell us about your role in mentoring younger women. What do you do specifically, and what do you encourage other women in the audience or women listening? What can they do to really help women and girls at all ages get into tech and get that fire that you have?
You know, I think back to when I was co-founding my first company, and I realized I really don't know the first thing about being a CEO. I'm going to try my best, but wow, I need to find the smartest people I can and pick their brain and get their coaching and guidance. And I just got up my nerve and started, for example, and I called Vinod Khosla. I had met him at a conference and ended up going to Kleiner Perkins, sitting down, and he gave me almost 3 hours of his time brainstorming an idea that I had. And he did that out of the goodness of his heart because he wanted to help. And so I encourage other women and entrepreneurs in general to reach out.
To men and women.
Don't be afraid, exactly, to ask for help and to ask for a cup of coffee, or I'd say a lot of leaders are overwhelmed by those kinds of requests. And so one way you can kind of boil it down is, I've got two questions. I'd love 5 minutes of your time, even something as specific and simple as that, defining what your request is up front. But don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help. So that is something that I do regularly with men and young men and women both.
And Vivek, can you cite any specific examples of people you have mentored, women you've mentored, or men?
I encourage people to ask for help. I mean, I do exactly the same, and I do the same when I need it. I just approach people, or I write to them, and you know, what's the worst case? They'll say no. What do you have to lose? So just email them and see what happens.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we've reached that point in our program where we've time for just one last question for each of you. And the question that I want to close on is, what is the best career advice you've ever received? You can tell a story or just give us a nice, pithy answer.
I'd say yes to the universe. It's kind of the short answer. It's say yes to opportunities that come along, even if they don't necessarily seem to lead in a straight path to your goal. You get exposed to people you otherwise wouldn't have met, maybe new ideas, and no matter what, embrace adventure and the opportunity to get out of your routine.
Thank you, Kim. Vivek?
I'm not sure about career advice, but I tell you, in my whole career, I've reinvented myself many times, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes involuntarily. Just accept the fact that things will go wrong, and every time things go wrong, learn from it and think bigger. Just keep trying at it, and you'll eventually do something right.
Great, Vivek. I hope you've enjoyed this evening's program brought to you by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. Again, we would like to thank Kim Polesi, chairwoman of Clear Street, and Vivek Wadhwa, fellow at Stanford University and co-author of Innovating Women. Our audience here in Mountain View and those of you joining us on the radio. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.